As we come to Daniel chapter 6, it's the completion of the historical part of Daniel. It is dealing with a picture looking forward to a time when the Antichrist will be in power, when the remnant of Jews will be back in the land, and many will follow for a false Messiah, and it will be a time of testing. Again, we see a command from the king that you can't worship anything but him. The difference, some of the things that we're going to see is if you'll recall, when Daniel and his companions first came to Babylon, they decided not to defile themselves by eating food that wasn't kosher, the king's meat. They kept themselves set apart for God. And when they did that, God honored them and blessed them. And they did great. But then Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were put to the test when Nebuchadnezzar built the statue. And he commanded everybody to worship it, and they refused. They stood there and defied it. I've often wondered about that, because these guys that reported them, that brought it to the king's attention that they weren't worshiping, why weren't they worshiping themselves? Did you ever think about that? If their face was to the ground, I mean, it's kind of like this. I've often been in churches where the pastor will say, "I want every head bow and every eyes closed." I always peek, you know. And it would be like me going in after church and saying, "Hey, the guy next to me was looking around." Well, how do you know? I was watching him. Why didn't you close your eyes? Well, I grew up in a bad neighborhood. Somebody's got to keep a watch out, you know. I mean, you know. It's strange, but you see, they were had these guys set up. They were deliberately waiting for this moment so they could accuse them. And now we come to Daniel in the lion's den, perhaps the most familiar story from the Bible. I think almost everybody in the world probably knows about Daniel in the lion's den. It's interesting because there's things from Daniel's like we might say they can't read the writing on the wall. Well, we know that's from Daniel, but a lot of the world today doesn't know where that's from. But if you say Daniel in the lion's den, everybody pretty much knows the basics of that story, right? They know about it. But what do we really know? You see, in the first case where God had given a command, "You shall not," and the government said, "You shall," and these guys stood up against that. But now we have something that God has said, "This is what I want you to do. Pray." Daniel was just simply obeying God. You know, there's two sides of obedience. There is the "thou shalt not," but there's also the "thou shalt." I've noticed that Christians tend to put a large emphasis on the "shalt nots." You know, "you shall not do this, you shall not do that." And even when I first became a Christian, I talked a lot about what I didn't do. You know, "I don't do this anymore, I don't do that anymore." Yeah, but what are you doing? I don't know if you've ever run into somebody who's given up drugs or alcohol and they don't have the Lord. But you know, if you give something up, you've got to put something in its place. And people that give up drug and alcohol, they usually, the drug and alcohol program is their new addiction. You know, I'd rather run after the Lord and be serving him. So here's Daniel. What he is found guilty of is praying. He was just faithful. And that's... I'm not as comfortable with what happened to Daniel. See, I can look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being thrown in the fiery furnace, and I can forecast, yeah, if the day ever came when, you know, they ordered us that we couldn't be Christians and we stood up and we're persecuted, you know, I can think. But now, when I look at Daniel chapter 6, the question is, are you praying today? Are you being faithful right now? It's not something that I look for, because Daniel did not, you know, all of a sudden one day decide to start praying. And you know, he was doing this throughout his life. It was a continued practice of his. And you see, it kind of puts a spotlight on us. Are we really doing what God wants us to do? And so, Daniel 6, verse 1. "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. Over these, 3 governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and the satraps because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So the governors and the satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. And these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." And I imagine you probably thought dirty politics were something of our age, right? Let's dig up dirt on the guy and disqualify him. He's competition. The king is thinking of putting him over us. We need to deal with it. And so they started looking into his life, going, what can we get? And they couldn't find any dirt on him. You know, we live in a country where people say, hey, anybody can grow up to be president. Yeah, if you start planning for it when you're about 5 years old and you don't make any mistakes and do anything that would be, you know, worthy of the network's attention. I mean, it's gotten crazy in our country. People, you know, they just want. But here's the thing. What if you were put in that spotlight? I couldn't survive it. And you, all of you know enough about me to know I couldn't survive it. Yes, we want a former mental patient for our president. No, I don't think it's going to go over. An old acid freak, you know. You know, but in the Lord, serving him is one thing. But you see, Daniel was in this position where he was put under a scrutiny by these men. And guess what their conclusion was? Can't find any problem. Darius, and by the way, any of you who have, you know, even read, I don't know if any of you do, but the literary critics who take God's word and compare it to historical documents, and I've been sharing with you all along how Daniel has been verified from various archaeological things. This chapter 6, Darius and the account that we read here is difficult to reconcile with the written records of the kings of Persia. Cyrus was the king at the time that Babylon fell. It's true that he was away, but his general who actually headed the army when they went into Babylon and killed Belshazzar and all those things, the general was named very clearly historically, and it's not Darius. Darius just isn't mentioned. The end of this chapter, however, could be read, Darius, even the reign of Cyrus, which if that verse reads properly, then he is Cyrus. This is another name, and the Persian kings, as their names are recorded, they are called by many different names in many different documents. So it wouldn't be at all unusual. And plus, that explanation I just gave you doesn't require me to pronounce any of the other names in the ancient historical text, which I can't pronounce. So the other explanations get more complicated. But I have read them, and I still have total confidence that every word in here is God's word. So this may very well have been Cyrus that we're talking about. He came in and wanted to organize the kingdom. And I want you to notice something. One of his purpose was to deal with the potential of corruption. He was looking to set up accountability. He put up the satraps with governors over them for the purpose that nothing would disappear, that what belonged to the king or the kingdom wouldn't be siphoned off by anybody. He was aware of the fact that men could not be trusted. You know, we live in a wonderful time, a wonderful country. But you know, our country is based on the fact that men are corrupt and can't be trusted. And in fact, we've divided our government up into three branches that all keep an eye on each other and try to keep the other branch from taking too much power. But we're living in a time when, you know, it's a little frightening, because as we would look at his attempt to set up a government that would avoid corruption, we see something that corrupt people can exploit any system and use it to their advantage. It's very possible that these men both resented Daniel because he was a Jew, but they may have resented him even more because he was honest, and they couldn't get him to go along. They knew right up front that he would be keeping an eye on them. And I don't know if you noticed, but there is much as saying, not only is his character above reproach, but his math is good. You know, he's doing a good job. You can't fool the guy. But I don't care how much trouble you go through. There is no system, there's no external form of government that will guarantee people do not become vile and corrupt and exploit it to their advantage. You read church history, all the various forms of church government that have been used, every one of them fails. You know, people say, well, this form's better, this form's better, we need this. And I believe we need accountability. But I also know that accountability, it only works if people are basically honest to begin with. If somebody is really dishonest and really is, you know, their heart is black and they're in a position in a church, you know, they can do things and not get caught. Even under the scrutiny of an investigation, you know, there's no way to absolutely prove that people are honest. And so God, you know, there just has to be enough good people in the government to keep tabs on the bad people. And when that you know, percentage tips a certain way, everything goes with it. So Daniel was one of three. He was being considered to be number one. So they tried to find something on him and couldn't. And it makes us look at our lives. If somebody was to try to find the goods on you, would they be able to? If your life was put under that scrutiny, you know, what would people find? So these governors and satraps thronged in verse 6 before the king and said thus to him, King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps and counselors, advisors, have consulted together. That was a lie, by the way. Everybody but Daniel was consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree, sign the writing, so that it cannot be changed, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home in his upper room with the windows open, towards Jerusalem. He knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. They throng before the king. They come to him and appealing probably to two things. His ego, O king, let, you know, anybody who makes a petition, any god or anybody besides you, let him be fed to the lions. That's part of it. But I think the other part is this. They were probably insinuating this would be a good loyalty test. You know, if there's somebody in your government, king, that really has a rebellious heart towards you, this will bring it out. This will force them to show their hand. But, you know, they'll go ahead and we can see who's really on your side and who's not. Whatever the reasoning was, Darius went along with it very foolishly. And he was manipulated by these men. And it's a sad thing to see. I have been manipulated before. There's nothing worse feeling than to take some action and discover afterwards you were set up, that you were fed a certain number of facts and that you reacted to those facts and went out and did something. And then afterwards, four more facts come in and you discover you had it all wrong and you have to go back and apologize and you realize the people who fed you the facts manipulated you. And you know, this man was in that situation. So Darius. Now, Daniel, I want you to notice, this did not take place in one meeting, I doubt. These men already had it all ready for the king to sign. Okay, they had been meeting and plotting this. Daniel knew it's been signed. It's in force. And so it may have been the day before, whatever, but this decree had been made. It had been announced. So, and Daniel, when he knew it, went home and prayed. And he prayed three times that day. And there's certain things to notice about Daniel. First of all, when he went home and prayed, he didn't open or close the windows. They were already open. And he bowed down and prayed towards Jerusalem. You know, Daniel was a Jew. The Jews today, many of them pray three times a day. Many pray two times a day. It depends on where they're at and what they're doing. And the Jews that do look to and pray, many of them still wear the tallies. Daniel, no doubt, would have been a good Jew and have stopped and turned. Debbie and I were in a bookstore in Palm Springs. It's kind of a gift shop. But when we were outside, we saw tallies and phylacteries, the prayer shawls and the little boxes that the Jews wear on their forehead and their hand. And we saw them in the window. So we were interested because those things are hard to find. And I've always been into Judaism and fascinated with it. So we went in and we were talking with this guy. It was about 11 o'clock. And all we got carried away talking with him. And a ringer went off. He said, "Oh, it's time for the noontime prayers." And he said, "Excuse me." He said, "You can stay if you want. Normally I show people out, but I have to lock the doors now." And so he locked us in, and he stopped and put on the tallies and the phylacteries, and he stopped and faced east and prayed. And you see, the Jews were to face towards the east. This was a synagogue before it was Calvary Chapel, where this section over here was a hallway. And the entrance was where you came in, and you had to walk to this end of the hallway to enter this portion of the building. And the reason is they have to pray facing east. So they wasted all the space. We're Calvary Chapel. I'm facing east. You're looking the wrong way. But you see, Jesus came along and said, you know, he was asked, you know, our people pray in this mountain, the Jews pray. Jesus said, which mountain isn't the issue anymore? God is looking for worshipers who worship him in spirit and truth. And it's no longer Jerusalem. But until Jesus said that, the Jews were to pray towards Jerusalem. So Daniel, being a faithful Jew, simply did, and I don't know if you noticed, as was his custom or as he had always done. He didn't change anything. There's a problem today. There are people out there that want to go pray in school simply because the ACLU doesn't want us praying in schools. It hasn't been their practice, but if somebody comes along and says you can't do it, suddenly they're going to go put on a religious display. Here's one of the dangers. Why are you praying? Are you praying to make a political statement? You see, it doesn't say Daniel heard what they did and went home and formed a political action committee to bring prayer back to Babylon. No, he went and prayed. Like he did the day before and the day before that and the day before that, going back to Nebuchadnezzar. It's what Daniel did. It was not anything out of the, and as a matter of fact, that's exactly what his enemies knew he would do. Because you see, they knew Daniel was faithful to God. Here's the danger I see. You know, when I first became a Christian, I don't remember people getting all up in arms about prayer in school. The interesting thing was is that I was still young enough. I was 20 when I got saved. So I knew a lot of high school kids. Or, you know, you'd talk to them at church and stuff, and close enough in age. My wife was in 10th grade when I met her, so she was going to Whittier High School. Every high school kid that I knew was part of a Bible study on campus. They prayed. They didn't care if they were given a room. They didn't care if the school allowed it or not. They met out front. They prayed. They shared out of their Bibles with each other. Nobody stopped them. And here's the thing. Years later, somebody comes along and says, we don't want prayer in school, you know, at this event or at that event. And all of a sudden, all the Christians want to go on campus and pray. I don't know about you, but that's not like Daniel. You know, the Christians kind of withdrew, or the church withdrew its influence from the public school and from the public arena, you know, back around 1900, and between 1900 and the 1930s, pretty much the church just kind of withdrew, and then all of a sudden later they want to go back on the attack. But wait a minute, Daniel was just faithful. He was just putting one foot in front of the other, serving God. He didn't open the windows to have a confrontation, but you know what? He wasn't about to close them either. He didn't deliberately make a public display, but he didn't hide. And as I look at Daniel, you know, the balance that Christians need. When we first formed Calvary Chapel, a few years later, we formed another group, an actual corporation. Its purpose at that time was to minister to counsel women who were considering abortion. Among the activities they did was to go outside clinics and hand out literature, very low-key, nothing confrontive, just people who were approaching abortion clinics were given literature, no grotesque pictures, nothing, just letting them know that Jesus loved them and there was another choice. You know what? There's kids alive today because of that. And you know what? Because of the radical maniacs that started violent, protests and attacking doctors and nurses and all the stuff that they've done, it's now against the law to stand in front of a clinic and pray for people and hand out literature. And that ministry, we effectively shut it down. And you know what happened? People got caught up in a cause instead of the glory of God. You know what? For us as Christians, there is no cause except one. I have pledged my loyalty to my King, and that is my cause. Now, if my King calls me to go out and make a stand against abortion, I'll do so. But I'm going to do it in a way that glorifies Him and will not bring shame to His name. When the cause becomes central, then I see people taking the unborn almost like the terrorists do refugees. They just want to exploit them for their anger and rage and as a cloak for it. And wait a minute, that's not what we're about. We're not here to call fire down. We're here to tell them about the love of God that there for them in Jesus Christ. We are to be salt and light, but we have to watch ourselves. Daniel just simply prayed. That was the only thing he did. And so these men, verse 11, assembled and found Daniel praying, making supplication before his God, doing exactly what they thought. See, Daniel had read Jeremiah 29, where God said, after 70 years, if you pray and seek me with all your heart, you'll find me. And Daniel wasn't about to stop. Daniel had read Psalm 55, where David had written that in the evening, in the morning, in the noontime, I'll pray. So he prayed three times a day. Daniel knew that God said to do it towards Jerusalem. So he's fully obeying God. And that's all he's doing. There was no political reason for it. His reason was he loved God. And he was serving God. And these guys found him guilty. So here's the question. If it was against the law to be a Christian as of today, could a prosecutor put you in prison? What would they find if they went to your house? What evidence there? You know, would they go in your house and go, wait, we found some Bibles. Oh, never mind. They've got dust on them. Nobody's read these for quite a while. Oh, look at here on the internet. Oh, no, that's Eddie Bowers. That's nothing Christian there. They've been shopping. You know, what evidence do we have? Are we faithful? Do we have that obedience to God? You know, some of you, I know you'd be found guilty. They would be able to say, I know that person. They're Sunday school teachers. They're every Sunday. They love the kids. I know that person. They just faithfully go there and pray. They're an usher. They're a person that they go there and they get strength and they're out there giving of themselves in all different areas in the community. Or, you know, yes, we can convict them, or no, we've got the goods on them. Not only do we not see the positive, but we're finding negative evidence here. And we have to ask ourselves, I want to tell you something. I don't, you know, I get under this spotlight and I want to squirm a little. Because you see, I have a problem. Could you rely on me to pray for you just by asking me to? I'll be honest with you. If you come up to me and say, pray for me, I'm going to pray for you right then because I know that I'll forget it if I don't. I'm sure none of you have ever forgotten to pray for somebody that's asked for you, but I do. And you know what I feel bad about? Is something as stupid as trying to figure out what's for dinner tonight will get my mind off of it. I'll be thinking, yeah, I need to pray for them. And I go, oh, man, what am I going to cook tonight? The trivial will get my attention. You know, I'm off the subject. And I may or may not ever get back to it. Now, if you tell me something heart-wrenching enough, I'll pray for you. But God make me more faithful. God teach me to be more devoted even than I am. So Daniel, these men assemble. Verse 12, they went before the king, spoke to him, said, King, you made a decree that every man who petitions any god within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. And the king answered and said, thing is true, according to the law of the Medes of the Persian, which does not alter. So they answered, said to him that Daniel is one of the captives from Judah. He does not show due regard for you, O king, for the decree that you have signed, and he makes petition three times a day. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself, set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. He labored till going down of the sun to deliver him. And these men approached the king, said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed." So the king gave the command. They brought Daniel, and they cast him into the lion's den. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." Or probably that would be better rendered, "He must deliver you." The king was kind of saying, "I can't, so he has to." Then a stone was brought, laid on the mouth of the den. The king sealed it with his own signet ring and the signet rings of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. King, you can't change your mind now. You've done it. See, the law of the Medes and the Persian, Nebuchadnezzar, in the morning, if he wanted to kill you, he could order it that afternoon. He could pardon you and say, "Never mind, I changed my mind." The Persian king couldn't. This king was under the law. Darius could not, once it was made an order, he could not change it. A lion's den in those days would have been a pit in the ground. Very frequently, archaeology has found that they were a mound around the side where the keeper of the lions could get up on top and walk around. And there would be a wall or a partition that went right across the middle of the lion's den, and it would divide it in two with a door in the middle. And in the daily keeping of the lions, meat would be thrown on one side of the wall, and then the door would open, and the lions would charge through to get the meat. The door would shut, and the keeper of the lions would then clean the other side while they were over on the other side. So these lions were conditioned in those days that the sound of that door going up meant, and if you've seen animals with raw meat and how they'll pounce on it, they knew that there was raw meat, and so that door opening was a trigger. It was a trained response that they would charge through and attack anything on the other side. Now, there would be doors, frequently with heavy stones, that would be rolled over the openings so that the lions couldn't escape. And the only way that the keeper had was this wall in between. So Daniel was sent through the stone door. The top of it's open to the sky. So King Darius has Daniel put in the lion den. And on the way there, though, he talks to him. He says, "Your God's going to have to deliver you. He must deliver you, Daniel." And so Daniel was placed in there, these men holding the king to it. Now, the king went, in verse 18, to his palace and spent the night fasting. No musicians were brought before him. Sleep went from him. After spending all day trying to get Daniel out, now he spends all night. Can't sleep. I think Daniel's probably sleeping. I'm not sure, but I think he's getting a good night's rest. The king arose very early in the morning, went in haste to the den of lions. When he came to the den, cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. And the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, king, I've done no wrong before you." King was exceedingly glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury, whatever was found on him, because he believed his God. So Daniel, taken first, sent through the stone sealed, but the king is so, you know, that night cannot sleep. And notice he did have some faith, but it was pretty shaky. He's out there at first light. Nothing he could do. Daniel had to stay in there overnight. But as soon as it's light enough that the day is over, he goes out. And as he's still approaching, he calls out. He doesn't wait to climb up and look down inside. Before he even gets there, he has to know what's going on. And in a lamenting sound, "Daniel, is your God?" "Yeah, yeah." And you know, I remember a story in the New Testament about a stone that was sealed with the power of Rome. and people coming out very upset, not to meet the resurrected Lord, but to finish preparing his body. And yet they were very surprised, weren't they? Isn't it interesting? They had enough faith to stay close. They loved Jesus enough that they were still there, and yet their faith was so shaky. The disciples were hiding, but not far away. They couldn't get themselves to completely abandon. You know, their faith was like a thread, but the thread didn't break. And so now here the king, he hears Daniel's voices come out, and he's just so excited. And by the way, he had a plan for the lions, because imagine these lions. Daniel said, you know, actually the word in here is Jesus showed up and held their mouths shut all night. Now, that would be pretty hard to sleep, I think. You could hear their stomachs growling and they're looking at you, but their mouths are shut. You know, I don't know if lions, how they look, to be in a pack of lions that are hungry, but they couldn't touch them. But you can imagine how they felt by the next morning when the king does this. It says the king gave command. They brought the men who accused Daniel, cast them into the den of lions, their children and wives with them. The lions overpowered them, broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. And so Darius takes care of those who accuse Daniel, and they are destroyed in the lion's den. And it's obvious that the lions, you know, were not passive or tame. They were very aggressive. And as soon as they could, they pounced on these people and destroyed them. And Darius wrote to all the people in verse 25, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble in fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. Who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius, even the reign of Cyrus, the king of Persia. Faithfulness. Faithfulness. I don't know what God's called you to do. Are you a mom? Be faithful. Be faithful to what God has called you to. That's all we really need to do. I don't need to make things up. I don't need to go out and find things to do. I don't have to find a cause. I just need to say, Lord, what would you have me to do? Discover it and do it and to be faithful to it. You know, one of the things that I see here that I want more than anything is consistency. I want a life that I can look back and go, I have a pattern that's carrying me towards the future. You know, we look at ourselves and say, I can pray while I'm driving. I can pray while I'm walking. You know, we sit in church and we pray. We close our eyes. But, you know, sometimes the knees need to bend. Sometimes we need to take these physical bodies and put them in a position of worship and in an attitude that we belong to the Lord. You know, sometimes I think we get very careless, and prayer becomes a very ambiguous thing that we kind of slip into and out of. And we I was praying a lot today. Were you? Did you really stop and focus on the Lord? You know, we may look at the Jews and they have a prayer book. They read it. They read prayers. We think, oh, that's such a dead, empty routine. They're so legalistic. They, you know, three times a day, they put on a tally, they put on a phylactery, they turn and face east and they pray. And you know what? When I was in Palm Springs, I looked at that man and I'm going, if somebody wanted to, they could find him guilty of devotion to God very easily, couldn't they? Could he find that in us? And I have to ask myself. Because we have it so good right now, and we have to be careful that we don't use it as an advantage to laziness or for, you know, but that rather we become even more faithful because God is just so good to us. And sometimes we just need to get on our knees and humble ourselves. So faithfulness. Lord, I thank you for your faithfulness. And God, I just thank you that you forgive us when we fail. And God, lead us into deeper and deeper devotion to you. As we look at Daniel, God, I just pray that we would have a consistent walk with you, that the surface condition of this world, the government around us, that all the things that are the winds of that change people's lives, that God, we would not be influenced by those, but rather our eyes would be set on you, that our lives would be rooted in you. And God, that from day to day, we would just be faithful, regardless of whether it is expedient or does anything, but just because you ask it of us and because we love you. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. God bless you. Have a great week.